Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are reimagining the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as customer expectations rapidly evolve. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Andy Helko.
And we are going to get right into it. Andy, what is your hot take?
Well, personas are dead. The old school persona that I think every marketing firm under the sun has used for probably, I don't know, since the dawn of time, that has the iStock photo, that has the fake Joe Smith, 25 to 65, and a couple of, you know, bullet points on, is just an absolute waste of time and useless to every marketing and salesperson out there.
I remember being asked to make a persona one time when I came from the startup background, right? So every startup like course that you go through has you do this process of trying to figure out who your personas are. And I remember being given like a template and it was like, what does she do on the weekends? Does she have dogs? Does she have children? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm selling a B2B product. Like, maybe.
Life goals,
like, know? It's one of those things too where it was probably well-intentioned back when it was first put together, right? Like, we want to understand our customers. And well, I guess we have to have a solution to do that. So this is the best we could come up with. So if personas are dead, what is taking its place? What should we be doing instead?
So for me, I've kind of coined the term twin. I think that we are in the age of AI, right? Generative AI has really just given us so much power. And what we need to evolve from is the persona that I think is flat, static, and just doesn't provide a lot of value, to a twin where with AI, however you want to use AI, you can create an accurate version of your customer, your ideal customer, and you can now interact with them. We know with AI, we can ask questions. We can provide files. We can do all of these things that are just so powerful. And then that twin can give us feedback. They could say, I like this, or I don't, click on this, or I won't. They'll tell you, this is what you should do better. And so I really think that every marketer, every sales team, every customer service team needs to leave the persona behind, let it, you know, bury it in its grave, and you can sing some songs to it being gone. But we've got to move to twins where we can interact with them, we can get real value, and we can actually create something that really changes what we do every day.
I love that concept too. I've never thought of using AI that way, but that makes total sense, right? Because what happens now with personas is you make your lovely little brand guide and it includes a section on personas, and then it lives in your Google Drive for all perpetuity, never to be opened again.
That's 100% it.
And it doesn't evolve with the marketplace. Because I don't know about you, but like, I've been selling stuff for almost 10 years now. And the way that I would sell to someone 10 years ago has fundamentally changed. Exact same product, exact same service. And yet the way you have to reach out to people and communicate to people and sell your value proposition and actually close the deal is entirely different. So I've had to evolve as a seller. So it makes 100% sense that my tools and my conversations and my thoughts around my persona would have to evolve as well.
Yeah, I have a book out called The Buyer-Centric Operating System. And one of the parts of the book is, you said 10 years. I say that they change every couple of months.
I agree.
Especially now. And so, you know, like you said, any slide deck that sits in a Google Doc and is opened every 8 months by some random person on the team is, you know, not only is it not used well, but it's also extremely out of date.
Like, the minute you make it, it's probably out of date.
I totally agree. And so that's why I like the idea of using AI and developing twins, because it should become an evolutionary thing. And then not only evolutionary and agile, but interactive and engaging, that can actually help you make decisions day in and day out.
When I like the ability to kind of brainstorm and test, not in the wild, right? like the ability to try things and to pivot things and maybe do something you would never actually say to your customer without testing it first, you know, to do that in like a lab environment rather than risking that social capital with your prospect or your client.
Well, and they don't really give you honesty. Let's be real that if you send something to a customer, you said, hey, what do you think of this? You're going to get platitudes. You're going to get a little bit of BS and smoke.
Or no response at all.
What'd you say?
Or no response at all.
Or no response at all. That's probably the more likely scenario. And so the twin, you know, you can train it to give you really candid feedback. It's a big part of my life. We created a product called Buyer Twin that does this, where you create AI clones of your target audience. And we've trained them to be very candid, to really provide, you know, good feedback. So if you give them a web page, they'll tell you, this is what I like, what I don't like. Here is, you know, what you need to add to get me convinced and whether I would buy or not after reading this page. And it tells you exactly. And so before you launch, like you said, you better do those tests, because otherwise you're just never going to be as effective as you can be.
So when it comes to all of that, though, how much of the training is coming onto the actual person? Like, how much do I need to teach the AI of who my ideal target profile is? Because I believe that a lot of customers or a lot of people these days don't actually know how to understand who their ICP is. We have what I call aspirational ICPs. I would love to sell to the Fortune 100 for $1 million contracts at a pop. And, you know, I would love them to do that to be my ICP. But in reality, it's probably not. So how do you guide through the process of figuring out what is your actual ICP versus what is your aspirational ICP?
Yeah, I guess my approach has always been you start with the segments, right? If you're in B2B, a segment might look like manufacturing, 100 to 500 employees, United States, and you create multiple segments. And that can be, you know, I want to go after manufacturing, healthcare. I think I also want to go after these industries. And here are five sizes within each that you've got 10. And then I've always taken a very structured and logical approach to prioritize that. One, what's the demand for my product for each of those? Are those people hungry for it? Or is it a nice to have? What's my experience within each of those? Have I worked in those industries before? Do I have team members that have worked within those industries? You know, do I have a lot of clients there? Specialization. You know, how much is my product or service unique to manufacturing or healthcare? And, you know, there's a number of logical factors you can rank from 1 to 5. And at the end of that, you should have your original 20 segments down to 3 that are your top 3 that, okay, based on this logical evaluation, I need to be going after manufacturers between 10 and 50 employees, you know, within the Midwest. And so that narrows that down. And then you can start talking about titles and who are the people within them. But you've at least prioritized the market segments that you really need to be focusing on to get the best result.
So what do you think are the biggest blind spots that leaders have when it comes to trying to implement something like a buyer twin AI? What are they missing?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the first piece is probably what we just talked about, is that I've talked to so many business owners, so many founders. And the one thing that I always hear is that fear of narrowing, right? And even if you're creating a twin and you're moving into that space, you can't create 100. Your team will never be able to engage with that. They can't test the campaign, you know, across 20 different personas or twins. And so what I've found is that people have a hard time narrowing down to what's most important. And that's like the first step. You know, we have to be willing to say, this isn't our ideal customer, or we're going to struggle to get traction in this area. So it's okay to ignore it. And I get it. Every founder, every owner, they're like, what if that opportunity comes up there and I'm not focused on it?
I also see the other side where they think to themselves that, well, you know, we could do anything and we can figure it out for anybody and everybody needs what we have. And like that, every time I hear that, I'm immediately like, no, this is not going to work. You're not going to make it, simply because if you are for everybody, then you are for nobody. And there's nothing wrong with having like a really deep niche. I spoke with a business facilitator one time and he was talking about, you know, how important it is to niche down. He goes, niches get riches. And I was like, hell yeah, I love that, because it is kind of scary to think about intentionally cutting off part of the market.
It is scary and I get it. And I think eventually you could do it, but especially if you're in early stages, you only have so much time. You only have so much money, you know, mental bandwidth, that if you are spread an inch deep across this huge number of markets and business sizes, you're just never going to be effective. I see traction when people get down and they get specific, because think about it in marketing sales. If I create a campaign for a manufacturing company that is 10 to 50 employees and the HR director, I want the ad to speak to them. I want the landing page to be about their pains. I want my conversion to be something they find valuable in. But now imagine if you scale out and you say, well, I'm going to target 30 different ICPs. That campaign is so bland. It's so, you know, surface level that you will never get anything that compels, convinces, or converts anyone.
And maybe that used to work. Right. But now I feel like, as we've kind of talked about, is that the customers and the way they expect to be connected with has really evolved. Right. So like I scroll on TikTok and my TikTok algorithm is entirely different than my husband's. We see different videos and mine seems very relevant. I have it very well tuned to the things that I like and that I'm interested in. And that becomes my level of expectation almost. And that a consumer experience, even though I primarily work in a B2B space, I still carry with that little baggage of that consumer experience where it feels very custom, very niche, very relevant to me very specifically. And even though, you know, it's business to business, I still kind of expect them to have that same level of relevancy to me.
Yeah, those social media platforms work because they tap into human psychology of egotism and, you know, thinking that the world revolves around us. I mean, there are so many studies that talk about, you know, people aren't focused on others and they see the world from their view, right? And so social media taps into that. Like, it keeps feeding you things that are so, you know, ego building from a mindset standpoint of what you like, what you think. If you're not doing that in your marketing, right, you know, you're really not tapping into that human psychology that's so important. And so, you know, you see why these social platforms become addictive.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that. But now imagine if your marketing can become addictive. And the only way to do that is if you, you know, focus in on that ego too.
Well, and I think what I see is a lot of people will market themselves and stay in their own main character moment, right? So like your brand is the main character in your life. You care so deeply. I care so deeply about the brands that I work for and that I'm trying to build. But like you are just maybe not even a sub character in your customer's main character story. And so you have to really disassociate almost in order to tell the main character story of your customer, not the main character story of your brand.
I love that, you know, way of describing the main character. And it, for the most part, the company, you know, you as the company trying to sell them, you know, you're probably more likely the villain in the story of like, you're taking my time, you're trying to take my money away from me, you know, more than anything. And so I completely agree with you.
And like, it's hard, right? Because I've built something and I believe in it and I love it deeply. And you made a comment earlier about, are people hungry for this? And I think that that's a really hard question, particularly for founders to admit to, because obviously you're hungry for it because you built it and you love it and it's your baby. But on the flip side, are customers beating down your door for this particular solution, or are they constantly talking about the problem that you solve? Because I've seen and been a part of too many companies where we had to first educate them that there was a problem in the first place, and then educate them that they actually have this problem that they just learned about, and then do another education that this problem is a big enough problem that you have to solve it now. And so by the time we've done all of that education on that stuff, there was no more bandwidth to listen to our solution.
Yeah, that's actually what my book is all about, that buyer-centric operating system, is that, you know, some organizations are company-centric, like in product, they love their idea, they love their innovation, you know, they create new features off what they think is cool, versus a customer-centric company that they're focused on what is the customer need, what pain do they need solved, what, you know, goal are they trying to achieve? And those are two different product roadmaps. Those are two different service offerings. And so I really think that, you know, there are a lot of people out there that end up being company centric. You know, my idea, my cool campaign and message, you know, my approach to sales, and not customer centric, which has to be, you know, what is the pain I'm solving? You know, what is the motivation I'm marketing to? What is the buying factor that I'm bringing up in a sales conversation? I mean, that's customer centric.
Yeah. Again, back to my TikTok algorithm. I don't know if you're familiar with the Savannah Bananas. Do you know what that is?
I don't.
Okay. You're going to have to look
up. I just never could do
it. You're going to have to look up the Savannah Bananas. So they are an alternative baseball league. Some people describe them as like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. But it's like legit baseball. They have former D1 athletes, former MLBers, and the entire game, they've basically like broken all of the rules. So they did a series of studies. They went to MLB games and they did a series of studies and started paying attention to when fans would start leaving. And it was always at like the seventh inning stretch or always at the 2-hour mark. And so they started creating all of these new rules for this baseball game that had to have a fans first mentality. And now they're selling out these huge stadiums that I went to a Twins game and it was like half empty, if even that much. And they're selling out these huge stadiums. They're selling out football stadiums and they have a 3.5 million person wait list to get tickets. Not like there aren't even enough tickets for all of us to have them. But the founder talks all the time about, one, the importance of the fan. So all of the decisions are made for the fan. If they haven't passed the fan test, then it doesn't go into their process. But also the branding is really intense. Like he's only ever seen in like a yellow tuxedo, for example, because they're the Savannah Bananas. But it's a great example of truly taking customer centricity to heart, because I know a lot of companies that claim customer centricity that don't actually ever showcase customer centricity.
It's the majority, in my opinion. I mean, I've had my business for 23 years and I rarely ever meet a company that really lives it. You know, and I get it. I mean, there are things that pull people away. I talk about like four forces and, you know, a deadline comes in for a marketing person trying to get a campaign out and they stop thinking about the customer, right?
Yeah.
You know, or I always see in marketing teams, what happens is you get other people's opinions in.
You get the highest paid person's opinion comes in and all of a sudden the whole campaign gets ruined.
I just had that happen. Is we had a campaign that was hyper focused on one target, you know, person, and we were going to launch it. A brand manager came in and they said, you know, we're not talking about this. And then the CMO actually came in. They weren't originally part of it. And they're like, you know what? We're not talking about that really new feature that we have enough. And I'm like, oh my God, we just went from something that really was trying to talk to a specific title and what their needs were to, by the time we had four different people involved, man, was it, it just was so watered down. And I get it. They don't even see it.
Right.
they're coming in and they've got a deadline, or there's opinions, or everybody's
or
got
there's some board member pressure, or the CEO wants to push something, or there's all these hidden things that are happening under the water that we don't even see.
100%. And I think it's, you know, it's one of those things that I call it like buyer drift, that you really don't say, I'm not going to be customer centric. No company ever says internally, like, we don't care about our customers. What happens is they slowly drift away. They make decisions. They build in processes, or you know, they drift away from their customer over time. And I always think of it like the ocean. You go out in the ocean on a raft, you know, and you look down, you're kind of relaxing. And all of a sudden you're 5 miles from where your family is down the beach. And that's what it looks like, is that you don't even notice that you just moved really far away from the customer, and then companies stay there forever.
I love the idea too of really micro campaigns, right? So like, instead of having one big campaign that takes months to build and then finally launches, like the idea of, we're going to go weekly sprints, and there's very micro targeted, and maybe we never do a broad based ad. Maybe everything is just so, so specific. It's very hard to do, and hard to do well, and takes a lot of time and experimentation to start to see success. But I believe that you will find more success if you can be so specific and niche, rather than just generically blasting things out there.
Yeah, it's been my philosophy for years is marketing. You need to create many hyper targeted campaigns and not like broad campaigns. I just don't think it's even, you know, in the same ballpark of effectiveness. But I also agree with you. It is hard. And that's why a lot of people don't do it. It takes a lot more effort to know your audience so much better. You have to, you know, really think about the campaign in their terms. Then you have to obviously create multiple, and you've got to like manage those. It's much easier. And usually the things that don't work as well are easier.
Yeah.
It's much easier to just throw out, you know, a broad campaign.
Yeah, just speak to everybody so you speak to nobody, right?
That is 100% it.
So considering of speaking of people, considering all the people you know or aspire to know, who is leading the charge? Who is doing this better than anyone else?
Yeah, that is a tough question. But the thought that I had is I spoke to a founder recently. I'm not going to share the name just because they may not want the story out there. But what I want to share the story is that they have a product, and behind the scenes, the product is, it comes across as automatic, but it's very manual underneath. And the reason is they're still in early stages, and they just wanted to get an MVP out, and they are just taking it to customers at very low cost, and they're testing this thing. And though, even though it's a little bit more manual underneath, they just want to get feedback.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was really, it was a powerful conversation because it felt so customer centric from the standpoint of, I don't want to put anything out there, and I don't want to put a lot of time into development. I don't want to put a lot of time into marketing. I don't want to do any of that until I put iterations in front of a customer and I get lots of feedback. And so it's been really interesting, their mentality of like, you know, okay, under the hood, it's a little bit put together with duct tape, but we are putting this in front of customers every week, and we are taking their feedback, and we're fully pulling it back into what we're doing, and we're making changes. So by the time we do want to put more resources, more money into this, we know that it is spot on for our customers. And so for me, like, just their mentality of like, their whole business model is being built around what their customer needs. And it's unique for me because a lot of the founders I deal with, I really think there is this ego mindset of like, here's my cool idea and I'm going to force it down people's throats, whether they want it or not. So that's just why I find that story so powerful, is that it just feels opposite from so much of what I see.
I agree with you. There's some stat out there that like 90% of all businesses that get started never go anywhere or something like that. Some insane number of the, and think about like if everybody operated like your example, that number would probably be a lot lower of businesses that fail simply because you won't have wasted your time or your customer's time or the market's time. If you just truly understand, do people even want this? Are they banging down the door for it? Or is this my cool idea and it's a customer of one?
Especially in early days, you only have so much money, you know? Yeah. And I think startups, you watch some of these startups that raise money and they burn through it so fast. Well, I mean, I would not burn through a penny until I felt like I was really validated in right. the marketplace. And that's just what I find refreshing is that, it, you know, they're 100% validation before spend.
Yeah. And that's definitely the smart way to do it, even if it means you're black boxing it a little bit and like doing some manual work on the back end. So, Andy, if someone is really connecting with you, if they want to learn more, they want to chat about your book or learn more about what you're up to, where can they find you online?
Well, andyhelko.com is a great first start. You can find my books, my company, the product Buyer Twin. That I've got out there and connect with me on LinkedIn. So check out andyhelko.com and Buyer Twin, which is an amazing product for audience clones.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the Growth Signal. This was really fascinating.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I loved it. And I hope to be on again sometime soon.